From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. While the Trump administration is lauding its success in strong-arming Mexico to militarize its response to northward migration, there is no acknowledgement on the government's part to understand what drives migrants to the U.S. or how poorly the U.S. treats them when they are here. Two new reports by Physicians for Human Rights attempts to shed light on these untold parts of the story. First, there is no one here to protect you. Trauma among children fleeing violence in Central America is a report detailing the horrific violence that children face in countries like Honduras and El Salvador. Second, Not in My Exam Room, How U.S. Immigration Enforcement is Obstructing Medical Care is a report highlighting what the New York Times and other outlets have begun reporting on, how Border Patrol and other immigration enforcement authorities are endangering migrant patients receiving healthcare in the U.S. My guest is Catherine Hampton. She coordinates the Asylum Network Program at Physicians for Human Rights. The Asylum Network Program is an initiative that recruits, trains, and supports a network of clinicians to provide forensic evaluations for asylum seekers and to advocate for human rights-based immigration policies. She's co-authored both reports we'll discuss, and she joins us now from Capitol Hill. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Sonali. Thanks so much for having me on.
Let's talk about the report on children first in terms of what it is that drives migration to the U.S. We've heard that there are record numbers of unaccompanied minors that are reaching the U.S. border. What your report points out is almost too difficult to imagine in terms of the violence they face. Can you give us a sense of what it is these children are fleeing in Central America?
Yeah, I think in the U.S. right now, it's the demographic change is very clear to everyone. We all recognize that rising numbers of whether unaccompanied minors or children coming with their family members are arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border. And a question that we've all been asking ourselves is, you know, why are they coming to the U.S.? And that's been the topic of many policy debates. And so we undertook this research to do a deep dive and really do a scientific analysis of forensic evaluations of children and adolescents seeking asylum in the U.S. to really uncover their reasons for fleeing their home country. And what PHR's medical experts found is that actually among the children in our study, 78% of them experienced direct physical violence, including aggravated assault with blunt instruments, sometimes with firearms. 18% were subject to sexual violence. 58% were witness to a horrific act of violence, including their parents being killed in front of them, family members mutilated. So the extreme harms and the extreme violence that children were fleeing really help us to understand that, you know, in many cases, children are not just coming to the U.S. Voluntarily out of choice, but really because they have no other option. Another section of our report talks about the failure of state protection. So children recounted times when they would try to go to the police to receive help and protection, and police members would either actively abuse them or completely ignore the crimes that had been committed against them, refuse to investigate. Children reported gang infiltration into police, being intimidated by gang members and not investigating crimes against children. So the children who our experts evaluated really came from very extreme situations, and that those findings really need to impact our policy response.
So that means the children that are arriving at the border are arriving with deep trauma, a lot of mental trauma, I imagine, and probably even some physical trauma. And then they have to contend with the U.S. immigration system, which under Trump in the last 2 years has become so much harsher.
Absolutely. You know, the clinical findings among the children that we evaluated showed that 3/4 of the children had a major mental health diagnosis, most commonly PTSD, but also depression and anxiety disorder. And so when you look at the stories of what these children have survived, when you look at their mental health diagnosis, you know, the last thing that would occur to anyone is to say, oh, these are children who need to be detained indefinitely, supported from their primary caretaker. You know, it's just not a logical policy response. months.
And so what was this report based on? How did you get access to children, and what sort of assessments were conducted?
Mm-hmm. So Physicians for Human Rights Asylum Program actually has a 30-year history, and our clinicians have conducted thousands of these forensic evaluations, which are based on the Istanbul Protocol, which is the UN standard for documenting torture and persecution. So we have more than 1,400 clinicians around the country who are trained in the Istanbul Protocol standards, and they know how to document psychological and physical after effects of torture and persecution. So they work with attorneys who represent these children to prepare a medical legal affidavit, which is used in the client's case. So the 183 cases that we looked at were, you know, expert evaluations of clinicians who did a full patient history, who completed either medical or mental health diagnoses, depending on the trauma symptoms that the child was presenting with. So these are really, you know, it's not just kind of a guesstimate, you know, it's really based on the children that were surveyed. It's really an expert diagnosis by clinicians who are specifically trained, who have a lot of experience working with asylum seekers, and have very considerable expertise, especially in working with children, so, which is a particularly challenging type of evaluation.
So then the results of what you found these children are going through, do they meet the standards for asylum that the United States has agreed to, an international framework on asylum that the U.S. has agreed to and should, under international law, be, you know, accepting asylum claims for?
You know, so asylum, the standard for asylum is very high. And at Physicians for Human Rights, we affirm that standard. So we're not saying, you know, every single person deserves to receive asylum. Asylum is for someone who has a well-founded fear of persecution based on one of five protected grounds: race, religion, nationality, political opinion, particular social group. It's someone who has either persecuted by the government or by a group the government is unable or unwilling to control. So this is a very high bar. But I think what's really crucial for us to always reaffirm is due process. So these children have complex stories. Our findings show that children were subject to multiple forms of trauma by multiple perpetrators, you know, extremely complex and severe forms of harm that really need to be evaluated individually and by trained professionals.
Now, are these just unaccompanied children you were looking at, but or do you include children traveling with their parents?
Both unaccompanied and children traveling with parents or with other family members who are caring.
So for those who have, obviously the ones traveling unaccompanied are facing their own sets of trauma, and I can only imagine what they go through in traveling, but what someone younger than 18 is going through traveling hundreds of miles north through Mexico into the U.S. border. But then those who might have the safety of being with their parents have a very high likelihood of being separated from their parents, at least for a time, once they enter the U.S., right?
You know, there is a permanent injunction against family separation. So the practice of family separation as a deterrence measure has been struck down in the courts as unconstitutional. However, there are reports that the government continues to separate families. And so that's something that really, as a practice, it must stop. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. It's a violation of civil and political rights of children to have to remain with their parents and for parents to have custody of their children, as long as it's in the best interest of the child. So yes, that's definitely a practice that cannot be implemented in this country.
And so then those migrants who do end up in the United States and who might be needing medical care, we are now hearing, face additional trauma in doctors' rooms and doctors during receiving healthcare. So let's turn to the second report that has come out around the same time that your organization, Physicians for Human Rights, released. Not in My Exam Room: How U.S. Immigration Enforcement is Obstructing Medical Care. Earlier this week, the New York Times reported a terrible story of how a pregnant migrant woman was basically, you know, had her healthcare obstructed by Border Patrol agents who refused forced to leave the room when she was receiving treatment. She had early onset labor. And recently, Rewire.news had a similar set of stories that they found, not Border Patrol, but U.S. Marshals Service, doing the same sort of thing, shackling pregnant women. So tell us about this report. How widespread is this practice? Because if these migrants are coming to the U.S. with physical or mental health issues, many of them are likely ending up receiving needed medical care. And now we find out that the enforcement agents are so zealous in their desire to detain these migrants that they are in some ways obstructing the medical care.
Yeah, so this policy brief is based on about 60 interviews that I and other colleagues conducted in California, Arizona, and Texas in different cities. And it was really reflecting the concerns of healthcare providers that we spoke to who face situations where they ask for a Border Patrol agent to unshackle basically a dying patient, you know, a patient dying of metastatic cancer, an HIV patient with severe dehydration to the point of organ failure. And not only did the Border Patrol agent refuse to unshackle the person, but also refused to give any justification why someone who was so physically weak, you know, needed to be under 5-point shackles or some kind of restraints, which don't allow for the doctor to provide the treatment that they're, you know, trying to give to this person to help them. So I think this is, again, this is this issue, just as we see with children and families, family separation, where security policies, which are, you know, a necessary part of our law enforcement, are unfortunately being given precedent over people's lives. So that's really where we need to draw the line. You know, health and human rights needs to be our priority. And doctors need to be able to deliver care to patients who are sick, you know, even if they're, you know, regardless of their immigration status.
Right. So, the Times pointed out that these patients were being treated as dangerous felons when, you know, they have here in the country seeking asylum. Now, what are doctors' rights? Because I imagine that some of the doctors that are in these situations might find that this is a new experience for them. They're trying to treat somebody who clearly needs medical care. And meanwhile, they have these agents, either Border Patrol or other law enforcement, immigration law enforcement agents, in the room with them. Do doctors even know what their rights are? And so what do you recommend needs to happen?
Yeah, so I fully recommend for all physicians and other health professionals to be fully informed about patient rights, about their own rights as a provider to offer ethical evidence-based care, because that is one of the problems, is that we do have existing legal standards and policy guidelines that can really protect the rights of patients. But if they're not well known and they're not implemented properly, then, you know, we face these kind of dangerous situations where people's health is really being put at risk. So, for example, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, this is a federal legislation which states that, you know, everyone is entitled to receive emergency medical care, you know, life-saving assistance, regardless of their ability to pay or their immigration status. So that's something that we already have enshrined in our laws. And both Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Customs and Border Protection have a policy called the Sensitive Locations Policy, where they recognize that immigration enforcement should not take place in hospitals, because hospitals are a place where, you know, we need to care for patients. So that's not the place to arrest someone if they're receiving chemotherapy or they're receiving some kind of very critical treatment or surgery. And so we really need for ICE and CBP to reaffirm the sensitive locations policy to ensure that all of their agents are trained and are fully implementing the policy, so that we can have enforcement, but enforcement which isn't sacrificing people's lives and their health.
So in your report, you bring up this idea of a sanctuary hospital. We've heard of sanctuary cities. We've heard of sanctuary churches. What is a sanctuary hospital?
So a sanctuary hospital is a safe space where patients don't have to be afraid that they're going to be targeted for enforcement when they're receiving care. And it's just a space where doctors and other healthcare providers are free to offer treatment according to their ethical and specialty, you know, standards, and where patients' rights are also fully protected. So that can look different ways, but I think there are many ways for hospital policies to really reaffirm those existing legal rights and to show providers exactly how they can ensure that, that patient rights are protected.
So do we have any such hospitals in the country, or is this a concept that Physicians for Human Rights would like to spread to see if you can actually encourage healthcare providers to label themselves such?
You know, there are a lot of different researchers and clinicians who are speaking out about these issues, doing research, publishing medical ethical journal articles. But I think, yes, we would like to create more of a movement where we work together across the country with clinicians to design, you know, policies and templates which can be adapted, and to really see more hospital administrations take these ideas on board.
Is there a precedent for this? I mean, do doctors know what, and do even hospital admin know what legally they can and can't demand for Border Patrol to do? For example, if there's a doctor who's treating a patient who desperately needs care and needs to discuss their medical options, and a Border Patrol agent is there insisting on shackling this patient or even being present in the room, does the doctor have the right to ask them to step outside?
The doctor absolutely has the right to ask them to step outside. And we did speak with a number of health professionals who did stand up and insist that agents leave the room while they're conducting some kind of procedure for the patient's privacy and dignity, or who did not clear a patient for detention when asked because they did not feel that the person's health status was such that they would feel that the person could be discharged safely to a detention center. But I think we really need to strengthen the system so that those doctors are not putting themselves at risk for doing the right thing and providing ethical care to patients. So I think that there's more that we can do to ensure that, you know, in those situations, both the Border Patrol agent and the provider are extremely clear on what the legal standards are, and that there's agreement and consensus so that it's not a point of conflict.
And we've already heard of the deaths of a number of migrant children, 5 to 6 migrant children that have died in U.S. custody, some of them from health issues that, you know, it's not clear whether they might have survived had they received proper medical care in time, or exactly what the details are for each case. But it's certainly a troubling number to see those numbers of deaths of children in particular. What are you hoping? You're on Capitol Hill. Are you talking to members of Congress about these reports and the kinds of standards that need to be put into place to understand the traumas that migrants that are arriving are facing, and to establish proper standards for their medical care?
Absolutely. Not only this week on Capitol Hill, where we're having intensive meetings and bringing up the issues of medical standards and detention in every single meeting that we have, but also throughout the year. You know, we're working with different offices on legislation that can improve standards in detention. We're advocating strongly for increased support for alternatives to detention. And there is a lot of momentum around these issues, especially given the rising number of deaths that we've seen in recent months. But there has to be more. You know, there has to be consensus across the aisle that this is an absolute priority, that this is urgent. Because we warned, the entire medical community was warning in advance that these deaths were at risk of taking place, and we don't think that it's going to be the last. These kind of holding thousands of children under these kind of conditions, not prioritizing alternatives to detention, not releasing families on bond or parole, not improving the standards, which for many years, Physicians for Human Rights and other groups have said are dangerously inadequate. I mean, these are, you know, conditions where tragedies are just waiting to happen. So
right.
We need urgent action now.
Instead of actually making it easier to not detain children, the U.S. has simply decided to build more detention centers because, of course, they have, under the Trump administration especially, continually looked at essentially torturing these folks as a deterrent, you know, the imprisonment, the detention, the separation, they're all, you know, in various ways, we find out through their own words, an attempt to deter people from coming across the border. Are you frustrated, as somebody who covers these issues and knows them so well, are you frustrated by the discourse in the political discourse on this issue that focuses entirely on, you know, these invading hordes of people, the record-breaking numbers of people coming at the border and trying to break U.S. laws, quote unquote, and very little discussion of what it is that's driving these vulnerable communities to come through and what they're facing here. I mean, it seems as though there's two complete different realities, you know, the fact-based reality and then Trump's reality.
You know, it is very frustrating, but I think everyone is on the same page that no one wants more children to die. And it's just a question of how urgently we need to act and what are the solutions to stop that from happening. So I think some of the disparities there are looking at what kind of solutions can we really propose. And I think what the report, based on the forensic evaluations of child asylum seekers, really shows is, listen, if people are fleeing really horrific violence and extreme harm, and they have no recourse to protection in their home country, even the most punitive deterrent strategies are not going to be effective. So I think we need to reconsider what is really going to be an effective immigration strategy. And we can do that. We have the tools to do that while at the same time respecting health and human rights.
Give out a website, Catherine, where people can find out more. I understand that on Physicians for Human Rights' website, there's a petition people can sign.
Absolutely. So if you go to phr.org, that's our website, and there's a drop-down menu under Take Action. And so we have a number of actions where you can contact representatives in Congress. You can contact the Department of Homeland Security. So we have online forms where you can easily just write in your own personal message on the topics of child detention, family separation, and send in your inputs to our policymakers.
We link to that from our website. Catherine, good luck to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
My guest has been Catherine Hampton. She coordinates the Asylum Network Program at the group Physicians for Human Rights. Again, that website is phr.org. She has co-authored both of the reports that we were just discussing. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.